Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content. Let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Kind of just the way I act. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. 2:05. It is a Wednesday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. I feel like it's another one of those days where I can spin the wheel of topics. We have Cori Bush. You heard that story at the top of the hour. Our newest member of Congress. I mean, it's not official yet. She has to win the general election in 2 weeks. But she wants to defund the Pentagon. That's constitutionally interesting. Rudy Giuliani apparently turns in a very embarrassing performance and shameful performance in the new Borat movie. We'll have details on that. That one could get bad. There's record snowfall in Minneapolis, which I'm so glad I don't live up north anymore. This is why I moved from Wisconsin. My nephew, who's a Cubs fan, lives in Minneapolis, and he harasses me all the time. I'm so glad there's snow up there. It's karma. It's karma for that kid. I'll tell you right now. But here's kind of a crazy story. So I am trying to secure a vehicle for my wife with the help of my friends at MasterCars, Inc., Alex and Gary Rosenberger. I talk about them all the time. I'm on the phone with Alex this morning, and we're just talking about, you know, the car search, because he's working hard for me. And he goes, and I actually told, I'm going to welcome him into the show here because we can kind of run down how this went. How are you, Alex, first of all?
I'm good. How are you, Mark?
I told you this story. So since I don't have a car right now, I'm borrowing, my neighbors probably think this is crazy because we have rotating cars. I'm borrowing my friend John's, it's his son's Tesla Model 3, which is awesome. It's a great car. But the key to the Tesla, Alex, in this particular case, is a little card that looks like a credit card. And we thought this morning, we couldn't find it. We thought my daughter might have taken it. Anyway, we found it finally. It was a bit of a panic. But I'm telling you this story, and you're sitting there patiently listening to my boring story. And you say, well, listen to my morning. Now, I want to kind of have, I think some people may have heard this story about this chase, but kind of start with your ride into work and what you saw. So there's this big bi-state area chase that goes on this morning, but I just want you to start where it came into play for you.
Yeah, so I'm just normal morning heading into work. I live in Edwardsville, and I'm heading down 157 in Edwardsville, and I'm heading down the hill heading towards the 270, and I see a Madison County police car with the lights, sirens going, screaming the other way. I thought, well, that's odd. And then a couple minutes go by, I come up to the stoplight. As I come up to the stoplight, to my right, an SIU police officer pulls up with his lights, blocks the intersection. I said, okay, this is getting very weird now. And right. Then traffic's backing up behind me at the red light. And so two lanes, all getting ready to go left, backed up. And then down the, I can see in my mirror, that coming down the wrong direction, a big commercial work van, probably doing about 100 miles an hour. And
okay, now let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there, because sure. This is where I think things turn very interesting. You see this big van coming basically toward you, but then you realize this is your lawn company, right?
Right. It's my sprinkler company, the irrigation company. I recognize the van, and the door, the side door, is wide open on it. So I found it bizarre to begin with, but then when that was, I saw that door open, then I got really concerned. And then, of course, with all the police coming through it, so they fly through the intersection on a red light going the wrong direction. The guy flies right through that intersection and goes up the service road. And then once all the police have cleared, I continue on my way, get on 270. And now the chase is running parallel to me, and I can see it over on the service road. And so now I'm just – and a couple state troopers pass me on 270. And then I'm thinking, too – you know, I'm worried because, you know, we know those people, and they're very good people from commercial lawn irrigation. And so I thought, well, I should call them. They probably don't know. And I did, and got a hold of him, and she didn't know. She said, I've been trying to reach that tech for like 45 minutes. And so then I got very, very worried about the tech, which I subsequently found out he jumped out of the moving van at some point.
But you knew this was somebody you knew, this young guy, right? That had worked at your house. Yeah.
Right. So very concerned at that point. And then so I continued on to work. And once I got to work, I just, you know, kind of fished around for whatever we could for updates and stayed in communication with the sprinkler company to make sure they were okay, or, you know, that they had found their tech and that he was all right.
So they ended up chasing over to the Missouri side. We still have some questions about what happened. This was all between like 8 and 9 this morning, but they finally got the guy, or a suspect, near Delmar and Whittier, and he's in, you know, custody. Do you know anything about, you know, the irrigation employee, or how, what condition he's in right now?
I do not. The only thing I heard, he's in the hospital. I hope he's okay, because I had to continue on with my day, and I left town, and so I haven't had a chance to get an update yet, but I'm sure hoping he's okay.
I do, too, and that is a crazy story. I mean, as soon as you were talking to me, I'm thinking to myself, I hadn't even heard this yet, so I called the newsroom. Roger was already kind of tracking it, but what a crazy morning. All right, listen, I've got stuff to do. You need to find me a damn car, so you got to get back to work. I'm going to let you go. Alex Rosenberg.
You got it, and I got
Cars,
it.
Inc. All right. All right, take care, Alex. I appreciate it. Man, I'll tell you what, that is bizarre. My morning kind of started off in a weird way. Dave, I'm going to bring you into the conversation here. I'm a bit panicked about something here. It's not quite as serious as what just happened there, but I got a call from my friend. I'm going to see my friend Rick in Las Vegas this weekend just to sort of hang out. And we're real close. We've been close since the early 1980s, and he wanted to give me heads up. Now, Dave, you might remember I had a trip with my family planned in July to go see him. Alexa was going to go. My wife was going to go. He calls the day before and he says, "Look, I have a fever. I need you to tell you this." So we called the trip off. There was not even, I guess, for a moment I thought, well, no, we're going to call the trip off. So he says, my housekeeper, her name is Blanca, has tested positive for COVID. And she was in his house last she was in the house earlier this week, but he was not there. And she was last in the house with him on the 7th of October. So I'm not worried about that at all. Dave, would you be worried about that? I mean, I don't believe you can get this thing from surfaces. He's fine. It's been 2 weeks since
it was the 7th, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I would not be too concerned.
Okay. So, based on that information, the trip's a go, right?
Sure. I would still go.
Okay. You would still go. Then there's this. Are you ready for this? Now, I had been given a little bit of information about this, and I wasn't sure, you know, how it was going to turn. I hadn't really given much thought. But you can't find, Dave, you cannot find, this is serious for me, very, cans of Diet Coke in Las Vegas, Nevada right now. And I'm not exaggerating. He said he looked on Amazon, a 12-pack of 15 cans is $28 right now. So you can find all the all the Coca-Cola in the world. You can find Coke Zero.
That's my favorite.
I don't like that stuff. I hate that stuff. It tastes blah. But you can't find the Diet Coke in the cans. That's what I want. So I don't want it in a bottle. I don't want it in mini cans even. But this now, all right, so I'm going to ask you again. I'm going, despite the COVID connection with the housekeeper. Dave, you know me very well. You and Fred, you see the addiction on a daily basis. Even though I'm not there at the station, you know that I have the Diet Coke in hand right now. At the
I don't doubt that at all.
There it is.
There you go.
So should I, based on this information that you now have and that I have, with a clear shortage of Diet Coke and maybe the inability for me to pack it in my luggage?
Well, that was going to be my next suggestion. You're not going to just going to do that for carry on?
Well, you can't do carry on because it's liquid. You know, they won't let you bring it on. But now this whole trip is in jeopardy, and it's just a shame. You know, first it was COVID, then it's Diet Coke. I don't know what to do. We're off and running here for a Wednesday edition of the show. We're going to talk a little bit coming up about Cori Bush wanting to defund the Pentagon. Wait till you hear this. And Rudy Giuliani. This time, Rudy might have gone too far. And it was Sacha Baron Cohen that might have exposed it. We'll talk about it next on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
All right, so I'm going to talk about Cori Bush here in a second and that nuttiness, but here's some other nuttiness. There's nuttiness from both sides. This is the theme song from Borat. I think I'm going to watch the new movie tonight. I'm actually waiting for my my screener copy. It's available on Friday. I'm going to try to squeeze that in today. But now you have some things leaking out. So Rudy Giuliani, this is a story that's in The Guardian today, and it's pretty interesting because there's video to go along with this. Now, again, I always kind of take a wait-and-see approach just because I want to see the movie. I want to see exactly what happened in this scene. But you have the former New York mayor and current personal attorney to Donald Trump seen reaching into his trousers and apparently touching his genitals while reclining on a bed in the presence of the actor playing Borat's daughter, who is posing as a TV journalist. Following an interview for a fake conservative news program, the pair retreat at her suggestion for a drink to the bedroom of a hotel suite, which is rigged with concealed cameras. This is kind of Sacha Baron Cohen's thing. This is what he did with the original Borat. So she removes his microphone. Giuliani can be seen lying back on the bed, fiddling with his untucked shirt. Rudy, reaching into his trousers. They're then interrupted by Borat, who runs in and says, "She's 15. She's too old for you." Now, some people might remember, and I kind of do remember this. Dave, we'll see if you do. You remember back in July, it was early July, something, it was weird. There was a story that came out. Giuliani called the police, and he makes this claim that someone comes running in. So this is what he said to the New York Post at the time. He says, "This guy comes running in wearing a crazy, what I would say is a pink transgender outfit. It was a pink bikini with lace underneath a translucent mesh top. It looks absurd. He had the beard, bare legs, and wasn't what I could call distractingly attractive. This person comes in yelling and screaming, and I thought this must be a scam or a shakedown, so I reported it to police. He then ran away. Police found no crime had been committed." Giuliani says, "I only later realized it must have been Sacha Baron Cohen. I thought about all the people he previously fooled, and I felt good about myself because he didn't get me." Well, we'll see about that. We'll find out what happened, because according to the story, he does not appear to acquit himself impressively during the encounter. Flattered and flirtatious, he drinks scotch, coughs, fails to socially distance, and claims Trump's speedy actions in the spring saved a million Americans from dying. He also agrees in theory, at least, to eat a bat with his interviewer. I mean, why wouldn't you do that? I think most people, if I was chatting with them right now at KMOX, I said, "Hey, let's go eat a bat together after the interview," they'd say, "Sure, come on board, we're gonna do
he's a very nice."
We'll see what the movie holds. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen and I go way back to when he pranked me on, this was not for Borat. This was for, what was the other one? He was the fashion guy.
Bruno.
Bruno. So I heard from Sacha Baron Cohen when Bruno came out, and here it is.
"Yeah, Mark, you came to Austria about 3 years ago. You left something in my room. It was filthy. You shouldn't have done that, unless you want me to show the world, St. Louis, what you left there. You better give it the review it deserves. My film is the most important one starring a gay Austrian since Terminator 2. It's also the most powerful documentary since The Lion King. You better realize that, Mark. Mark, you broke my heart. It was just 20 minutes of fun for you. For me, it was another broken heart. Isham's still recovering. If you want to get at me with your reviews, go for it. I'm tougher. You know, Isham not really into fashion. Ish find it superficial. I mean, people look at me and think that I'm just a beautiful 19-year-old with a perfect hairless body. But you know, there's a lot more to me than that. You know what the most important part of my body is? It's the 4 inches between my ears. My B-R-I-A-N. What's up, St. Louis? I mean, you guys are really pushing their limits, you know?"
See, he tried to blackmail me too. And it worked. Because I think those of you listening right now realize you never saw the video from Austria. The video didn't get, and this was in the Twitter era. It could have easily gotten out. I took those threats very seriously, and the video never got out. By the way, that really is, I think some people might be wondering, that really is Sacha Baron Cohen. He did that for me during the release of that movie on Channel 4. All right, let's get to this craziness since it makes a good segue from what we just sort of talked about here. Cori Bush is the new progressive congressional Democrat in the 1st District. She beat, you might remember, Lacey Clay Jr. in that primary in August in somewhat surprising fashion. I think some people may have seen the writing on the wall, because there's this movement. We've seen it with AOC and Ilhan Omar and others in, you know, in certain congressional districts, and you have a very, very liberal congressional district. So yesterday, I missed this at the time, and I had some people bring this to my attention, and I'm glad that they did. Let me find the exact tweet from yesterday. She says, yesterday, October 20th, U.S. House candidate, Missouri 1, if you're having a bad day, just think of all the social services we're going to fund after we defund the Pentagon. So Cori Bush, the congressional representative who will win in a couple weeks, because there's really, I mean, there's a Republican challenger, but she's going to win. Basically, if you're in a district like that, it's like if you, it's like Sam Page. I mean, maybe Paul can pull a miracle. I don't think so. I like Paul, but you know, Sam Page wins the primary. He's going to win the general election the way that St. Louis County is cut. But let's think about this just a little bit. It's easy to toss this aside and say, look how crazy she is. By the way, Ilhan Omar in Minnesota retweeted this. So the squad is all on board here with what, by the way, and this is interesting to me, this is a constitutional responsibility. As much as I believe social services are important in this country, philosophically, I would differ from Congresswoman Bush in that I think that that's not a constitutional responsibility of federal government. In fact, I know it's not. The Pentagon and national defense is. That's like one of the primary responsibilities of members of Congress and the Senate. But apparently she doesn't understand that. Now, let's kind of think about this for a second. Let's do a little quiz here this afternoon. What's the largest employer in the 1st Congressional District? Let's think about this. Is there a big employer here in St. Louis that might build airplanes and things like that for the Pentagon? Oh, Boeing. So in her district that she's now going to represent, the largest payroll in the state of Missouri is Boeing, and it's in her district. And by the way, just for the record, I'm crazy about this because I think she's crazy. I think you might hear this on some national shows tonight because it's been brought to the attention of Tucker Carlson and Hannity and people like that. I think this is good red meat for that. But Democrats, without naming names, Democrats here, I've had three Democrats reach out to me, pretty high profile, people you would know, that brought this to my attention and wanted me to talk about it because this is craziness. You know, I think there are a lot of people right now, I feel sort of like a person without a party to a certain extent. I think a lot of Democrats feel that way as well because you have this nuttiness. How does a discussion like this actually move forward and take place, right? Let's say that someone from, you have 16,000 employees for Boeing in Missouri, 461 suppliers. The suppliers are important too. Local businesses, some of you are those businesses listening right now. You supply Boeing. You make money. You have employees that you employ that pay taxes for Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush's salary. $823 million in supplier spending with Missouri-based suppliers from Boeing. And in the 1st Congressional District alone, there's 192 of those suppliers and $433 million in spending. And most of the employees are in the district. So it's craziness. How do you sit down and have a conversation with Boeing when you just tweeted out, when you're supposed to represent interests of people in your district beyond the crazy zaniness of defunding the police and defunding the Pentagon? How do you do that, Cori Bush? I was going to try to keep an open mind. I thought about reaching out and saying, you know what, let's break bread and talk about things. But you can't talk to someone that's this crazy. That's impossible. 228 at the Voice of St. Louis.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on KMOX.
Actually, Mark Cantor is going to join me in the next hour. We'll talk with him a little bit about a bunch of different things that are in the news, including the case from Starbucks in our area, which now has prompted a lawsuit. So, look, we've done this every once in a while, and I wanted to do it one more time today. I'm going to vote in person. I kind of like voting in person. I like going on election morning. I don't mind standing in a short line. I think it makes me proud to be an American. I know that's kind of counterintuitive these days. You can't be proud to be an American. You have to be ashamed to be an American, right? You can't be proud of this country. But I'm going to vote in person, but not everyone's comfortable doing that. So St. Louis County Republican Election Commissioner Rick Stream back with us this afternoon with just 13 days to go to this election. On the Quiver River Electric guest line, just basically running down, Rick, what people need to know. Is there a deadline that we're facing for something even tonight?
Yes, there is, Mark. Thanks for having me on again. 5 p.m. tonight is the deadline for applying for an absentee ballot to be mailed to you. So you can get that application to us by email, by fax, in person. It's obviously too late to mail it in, but we have to have it in our hands by 5 p.m. tonight, or we cannot mail you a ballot. Now, of course, if you miss that deadline, you can still come in and vote in person here at our office or at the 4 satellite locations that are around the county that open tomorrow. And, of course, you can always vote in person on Election Day, like you just said you were going to do.
Yeah, so let's just so people know on the absentee voting, Rick, that's the process where you need to have it notarized, correct?
Sure. Well, it depends on which block you're checking on the absentee ballot application. If you're incapacitated or disabled, you do not need a notary. And if you're caring for somebody who is, you do not need it notarized. Okay. The seventh block there, which was added this year by the legislature, is the COVID block, as we call it. You're 65 years or older, or you live in a long-term care facility, have chronic lung disease, asthma, have serious heart condition, you're immunocompromised, have diabetes, chronic kidney disease, dialysis, or liver disease. Any of those reasons, you can check that box, and that does not require a notarization either. All other of the five reasons there, absent on election day, restricted by religious belief or practice, employed as an election authority. I mean, participant in the Missouri Safe at Home program, you're incarcerated, but you can still vote. Those all require notarization. Now, if you get an absentee ballot mailed to you and you fill it out, you can bring it up to our office or to any one of those satellite locations I described, and we will accept it there. You have to provide identification. So it's basically a notarization mm-hmm. right there on the spot.
And let's talk a little bit more about the satellite locations. I know we discussed that last time. Those start sure. tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. We have one at the South County Library. I'm sorry, the St. Louis County Library in Mid-County, which is on Maryland Avenue in Clayton. We have the North County Recreation Complex up on Redmond Road, the South County Government Center, which is in Keller Plaza down on Lee May Ferry, 4544 Lee May Ferry, and then the West County Government Center, which is 82 Clarkson Wilson Center out in Chesterfield. Those four sites will open tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and they close at 4:30 each weekday on two Saturdays prior to the election. This Saturday and next Saturday, they will be open from 9 to 1.
All right. One more question here, because there's a lot, everybody I talk to about this election, they think there's a lot of fear about how these votes or when these votes will be counted and that we won't have an election result that night. So in Missouri, you can only speak for this area here, but in these votes that are being cast right now, the absentee ballots, the satellite locations, all of those things, Rick, when will those votes actually be tabulated?
Well, we actually tabulate absentee votes first. We, as we're getting them here in the office or the mail is coming in, we're processing these envelopes that have the ballots in them. We're checking to see if the signatures match, which is in the MCVR, Missouri Centralized Voter Registration System. And then 5 days prior to the election, we're authorized by the state to prepare the ballots. We have bipartisan teams take them out of the ballots, and then we begin to scan them in. And we can scan them in for 5 days, all these ballots, because right now we have well over 100,000, about 120,000 ballots in-house. And so we can scan those in, but we don't start tabulating them until 7 p.m. on election night. So as we did in August, we'll probably have a result by 7:45 or 8 o'clock on the absentee ballots, which could amount to about a third of the total vote for that night. And then we hope to have the other results by 10 o'clock.
Just quickly, how would that compare a third? If you get a third of those votes absentee, how would that compare to 2016? Is it significantly more, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it was 10% in 2016. Right. And so that's it.
Rick Stream, appreciate the information. I know that a lot of people are anxious about the, when I say anxious, just getting ready to, you know, decide on how they're going to do this. So I appreciate it. I think people needed to know that.
No problem. Glad to help, Mark. Thanks a lot.
Take care. 241. So there's more information out about Breonna Taylor today. There's a grand jury that has been granted. Actually, all the grand jurors, I believe, can now speak. But there has been one that has spoken. And there's some interesting audio from the police officer who was shot that night at her apartment. We'll get to that coming up next.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX.
Welcome back, Mark Reardon's show for a Wednesday afternoon. We, as a programming note, I will be off on Friday and Monday, so we will have a show tomorrow. Mark Cantor coming up, personal injury attorney. Some interesting things in the news that have popped up along those lines, including that case from Starbucks, and Mark's going to weigh in on that at 3:20 this afternoon. My friend Joe Arnold from Louisville back with us. He's been great updating us on the Breonna Taylor situation, former WHAS radio and television reporter. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. Good to hear your voice.
After I let you go here in just a couple of minutes, there's some very interesting audio from an interview that one of the officers involved in the raid that night, Jonathan Mattingly, sat down with Michael Strahan and did an interview. So I'm going to play some of that. Who is Jonathan Mattingly? He's one of the officers that showed up that night when all this happened, right?
He's the officer who was basically the first one in the door and the one who was shot by Walker, the boyfriend of Breonna Taylor, in the apartment with her. And was, you know, suffered one gunshot wound, but it was to his femoral artery, and so basically he was in surgery for about 5 hours, and it was a very, you know, dangerous wound. And so not only he talked to Michael Strahan, but his wife did as well, about what it was like, you know, that night. And frankly, Mark, this, you know, credit to you again, that from the very beginning you've been careful to say not to lump this into every other shooting, because every case is specific to its own facts. And that was the point, I think the biggest point that Mattingly wanted to bring up, for what he's kind of experienced through all this, is that he really is upset with the city of Louisville, with police leadership, for not acting quicker to delineate, to talk about, you know, this is not the same thing as George Floyd in this situation, according to him. Now, of course, there are some folks who are of the mind that all these cases kind of all follow the same stripe, and as a result, they should be equally scrutinized.
Okay, so what's the latest on the grand jury or the grand jurors that want to speak? And I think one of them has said something through his attorney, right? Or her attorney, maybe.
Yeah, it hasn't been said with him or her, but yeah, but two of the grand jurors have said that they, you know, want to speak. It's unprecedented, really. This is a veil of secrecy over grand jury. That's kind of the whole nature of it. And you can actually go to jail for releasing grand jury testimony, but in this case, the judge said that there is a, you know, compelling reason. As much, this is kind of a political stripe to this as well, in the sense that the judge kind of commented on the Attorney General of Kentucky, Daniel Cameron's, comments publicly about this, and kind of used that as a way of saying he invited basically this sort of circumspection, because he's saying, you know, he's kind of leaning on the grand jury to say they could have indicted if they wanted to, and they didn't see the evidence. Well, this grand jury juror is saying in a statement through an attorney that the attorney general's the prosecutors who presented the case to them never really explained all of their options. And the problem here, of course, the grand juror, they can say that they're speaking for the entire grand jury, but, you know, as far as the law is concerned, the grand jury did have the right to do all these things, and they did not. So the question is whether the other 11 grand jurors feel the same way as this one grand juror does, who is ostensibly speaking for them.
Okay. Now, that raises, before I let you go, because I want to play some of this audio, does that mean that does this ruling by the judge allow all the grand jurors to come forward if they prefer,
yes,
if they want, or just these two?
No, it allows, basically, it's a blanket admission. Now, and interestingly, Cameron, the attorney general, he disagreed with the ruling, but he didn't appeal it, which I actually think is pretty telling. Because it's one thing to say, as a matter of law, I disagree with this, but the fact that he didn't fight it, I think that he believes that the law ultimately and the case, as far as what is a provable crime, if you will, would prove itself out by the scrutiny of the public. But no, in the future, if any other grand juror wants to come forward, this judge says that all the grand jurors in this one case, this does not, the judge said, apply to other cases. But you better believe that other people in other cases now will use this as a precedent to say, well, we want to talk about, you know, what happened in our case, too.
Joe Arnold down in Louisville. I really do appreciate, you know, the help on this, Joe. You going to make it in for any of the holidays? You got to come see us in person, I think, even though I'm not really in person. But we'd love to see you if you're in town here in the area for the holidays.
What I'm going to do, Mark, is I'm going to stand outside KMOX. I'm going to carol. I'm going to social distance, but I'm going to stand outside. And my friend Scott Jennings and I, who obviously is a frequent guest on your show, we're just going to sing songs. Well, maybe we must come to your house.
I love it.
Just do it from there.
Christmas carols.
Okay, maybe some
that
mole
would
wand.
Be very okay. Special. I can look forward to that. Joe, I appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, let me play a little of this audio, too, because this is interesting, too. Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly, we talked about him. He was on with Michael Strahan on ABC News and finally talked a little bit about what happened. By the way, he's the guy that wrote that email the night before the grand jury results were revealed, saying, you know, basically, stay strong. We did the right thing. So let's go through some of these sound bites. I think Michael Strahan, you know, here's the thing with this interview. I'm glad that he did it, but this should have been done a long time ago. And I don't know if maybe he was unwilling to do it or they just couldn't find the right people to do the interview, because some of this information I think would have been helpful at the time. So this is Officer Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly, and he talked about how things could have been maybe different that night.
Do you believe if you had body cameras, this wouldn't have happened?
No, the incident would still happen, but it would have been shown on camera what happened. This wouldn't even be an issue. This wouldn't be a case. You'd never hear about it. Mm. Michael Strahan would never know about this case if we had cameras on that night.
How would you have done it differently if you could have?
We would have either served the no-knock warrant, or we would have done the normal thing we do, which is 5 to 10 seconds, to not give people time to formulate a plan, not give people time to get their senses so they have an idea of what they're doing. Because if that had happened, I'm telling you, Michael, if that had happened, Breonna Taylor would be alive.
You believe she'd be alive?
100%.
If you had just stormed in.
Yes.
And not given them time.
I do.
Well, I think he's right about that. I mean, you can't know for sure, but you probably wouldn't have had time for Kenneth Walker to get the gun, right? Now, I think it would have been better to have the body cams, because that would have maybe, I think people would have still heard about this case, but it would have cleared up so much to begin with, and we don't have that. So he weighed in on this before the verdict or the non-verdict or the decision was revealed, and then the protests happened. He weighed in on that today with Michael Strahan.
And the frustration came from our command and from the mayor's office, because there was so much disinformation out. Because this is not relatable to a George Floyd. This is nothing like it. It's not an Ahmaud Arbery. It's nothing like it. These are two totally different type incidences. It's not a race thing like people want to try to make it to be. This is a point where we were doing our job. We gave too much time. When we go in, I get shot, we return fire. This is not us going hunting somebody down. This is not kneeling on a neck. This is nothing like that. And I know I'm not going to sit here and act like playing the big victim card. But I was a victim in this as well. My family has been a victim in this. They have had to go in hiding. They have had death threats. When somebody sits back from their mansion and accuses somebody they don't know of being a racist and being a dirty cop and being a murderer, when that's not the case, that does affect you.
Okay, so let's think about all the background that most people don't know. Hopefully you do, because you've been listening to this show. You have a jailhouse conversation that's recorded in the application for the warrant from the boyfriend that was arrested. Mr. Glover, Jamarcus Glover, not Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker wasn't a drug dealer. We don't think he was. No evidence of that at all. But the other boyfriend was on tape with Breonna Taylor in January. He also, by the way, called that morning to say, or was on a call that morning of the shooting to say that she had $8,000. Now, they never found any of that. But this is important information, because you have that. The warrant is allegedly applied for legally. They have them on tape. They see cars. They have pictures of packages, all these things. And then, right? Okay, we're waiting. Now, they say they identified themselves, but nobody's answering. Then they go in. On a no-knock, you go in. The reason they do that, they don't want to be shot. Now, I've made the case that this case has nothing to do with race. Zero. When he says it's different than those cases, it is. This, you can make a strong case that this had nothing to do with race whatsoever. But here's what he says a little bit about that, about profiling.
When you're dealing with criminal element, you know, you talk about racial profiling. Good police, anyway, police I've worked with, don't racial profile. You criminal profile. Let's address the fact that just because you're black, you're a threat. It's not the case. I'm not scared of you.
Well, that's how black men feel. That's how black women feel.
But does that make it real?
If it's because how you feel, then it's real.
No, not necessarily.
So what is the difference between criminal profiling and racial profiling?
Criminal profiling is when you get to know an area, okay? When you work in an area long enough, you can tell by people's demeanors. If you pull up beside somebody and they don't make eye contact, they swerve off, there's just different elements of people's psychological game that they put out that you can tell when you've done something long enough.
So basically, it's a feeling.
Not just a feeling. I mean, it's a feeling that goes along with what you've experienced, with what is in the area, what should or shouldn't be.
So he's talking about experience. And there's another bite I can play after the top of the hour. He pointed out in the interview that police were not there, coincidentally. They just weren't. The search warrant showed that she was getting packages that may have been connected to Jamarcus Glover, and that's why they were there that night. I'm miraculously, the Washington Post did a story in this interview, and for the first time ever, I've seen that in print. What I've been telling people for months now, that there was good reason for the police to be at that apartment. There's a first. The media actually reporting something. 2:57, top of the hour coming up. News. We're back for a second hour. Audio cut of the day and a lot more on KMOX.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.